Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to 90s DVD Rewind. It has been a while. We have been trying to follow a tight schedule, but unfortunately, due to work and other, I guess I would say, important things or just nobody cares. Football, there it is. So we've been producing episodes, a decent amount of episodes, actually. I believe we are on episode 10, if my math serves me right. Last episode, episode 9, Michael's probably favorite, Falling Down. You can check that out on Anchor. Oh no. Oh no. I think I am. That's not good. I might just be reliving everything all over again. Yeah, I guess they did. I guess they have just won the World Cup. I remember when I did that mistake as well. So. Yeah. So. All right. Well, Anchor is the place that you guys can check us out. Head on over to anchor.fm/90rewind to head on over to our page. You will see that we are also available on Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Spotify, and Stitcher. Not to mention, you can also download any of those apps, or if you want to download the Anchor app, you can follow us there. Gentlemen, as always, we ask each other how we are doing. I actually have a story about work, but before I get into that, how have you two been?
I have been working a lot. Because it's tax season and I have a lot of tax returns to prepare. So I'm coming in. I haven't slept more than 4 hours in a night in quite a while, but getting through, doing okay, living the dream.
This is Justin. I'm doing well.
I think the people might know who you are by now, but I appreciate you always introducing yourself.
Oh, they don't know. I don't know. I talk about what, 10, 12 minutes of podcast. They might not know, but
if that,
yeah. Football's back, just a great time of the year, and it will be great, for the next 4 months until the Cowboys, either don't make the playoffs or get eliminated from the playoffs. So, looking forward to that. And, I don't think I've ever asked this before, but Nick, how are you doing?
I've been driving back and forth from my job in Pennsylvania to my job in New Jersey, which is on the coast. It's been a little hectic, but, you know, slowly but surely I will start to get in a groove, and hopefully my bosses can work a schedule out to where I'm not constantly going back and forth every other day. However, just a little story, which actually happened at my job in Pennsylvania, the last job that I did with them. We went to a casino, and while we were bringing in all of our equipment to set up, the guy at the front was like, you can't go in. And it was me, this other guy, Matt, and this other guy, Vince. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, you're not old enough to be here. And the guy, Matt, turned around and goes, bro, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, you know, you don't look like you belong here. And the guy, Matt, goes, there's no way we would be scheduled for this job if we weren't old enough to be in a casino. And so I went and grabbed my ID, and before I gave it to the gentleman, I said, how old do you think I am, just out of curiosity? And he says, well, I think you're 26. So I'm like, well, I'm 25, almost 26. He not only took my ID, but scanned it twice because he thought it was fake. And I thought that I was going to be done with that, didn't think anything of it. But later, as we were leaving, after we finished our broadcast, I was taking some of the equipment back to the truck, and there were a new group of individuals standing at the front door, and I made eye contact with them as I was leaving. When I came back in, the one woman that was there was like, where are you going? I'm like, what do you mean, where am I going? I'm going to get the rest of my equipment. And she was like, well, you have your ID on you? And I'm like, I just left the casino. You saw me come out and leave. If I was able to get in, why do I need to give you my ID again? Not only did they take it, thought that it was fake, and scanned it twice, I was absolutely blown away that they were giving me such a hard time and not a word to the other people that I was working with. But some people just have nothing better with their times. They just want to try to aggravate others.
Listen, they're just doing their job.
And,
doing their job, trying to keep it safe. They don't want to get, the liquor board up there saying they're letting in underage people with drinks on.
But I left.
They could shut down.
I left.
That doesn't matter. Listen, if you go in on a fake ID once and come out, you can't get back in. They're doing the right thing. They're doing their jobs. Congratulations, casino.
Disagree.
Just a con of being young and handsome. That's all it is.
Right. Us helper boys, we all look like little
kids.
Yeah,
you're not wrong.
I remember I went to a casino in Atlantic City with Aunt Karen and Christine once, and before we went in, I said, who wants to bet that I'll get carded at least 5 times tonight? And Christine was like, that's ridiculous. That's absurd. And I was probably, this was after I moved to Ohio, so it was within the last 10 years or so. And I got carded 3 times in the first 10 minutes. And then Christine rescinded the bet.
Well, surprisingly, I actually went to Atlantic City the previous job, and there wasn't an issue whatsoever. Not.
All right, Groundhog Day.
There it is.
I feel like we're living the same story over and over again.
So Groundhog Day was the movie that we watched. As always, this is the part where I tell you that if you have not watched it, stop, pause, save this, come back later, and you will pick up where you left off, to where now Michael will spoil the Groundhog Day.
I will. This week, we're going to rewind 12 Monkeys.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Podcast might end if we did 12 Monkeys again.
Oh, come on. If you watch it again, you'll like it more, I promise. Promise. All right. So we are actually rewinding Groundhog Day, released on February 12th, 1993. That is actually 10 days after the actual Groundhog Day, which is February 2nd every year, released by Sony Pictures. As everyone knows, Groundhog Day, as I'm sure everyone knows, Groundhog Day is the day that people wait for a groundhog in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania to pop up out of the ground. If it sees its shadow, we get 6 more weeks of winter. If it doesn't see its shadow, I don't know, I guess winter's over. So that's the kind of the premise behind the movie, is we've got this weird groundhog. It's set in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. The movie was co-written and directed by Harold Ramis, also known as Egon from the Ghostbusters. Mr. Ramis wrote or co-wrote a number of classic comedies you've probably heard of. Animal House with Mr. Belushi, Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, and Ghostbusters, all starring Bill Murray. He also directed Caddyshack, National Lampoon's Vacation, Multiplicity with Michael Keaton a few years later, Analyze This with Robert De Niro. The star of Groundhog Day is Bill Murray, plays Phil Connors. Bill Murray was also in Meatballs, Caddyshack, Stripes, and Ghostbusters. We've also got Andy McDowell playing Rita. Miss McDowell was in, prior to this, Sex, Lies, and Videotape, Hudson Hawk, subsequently in Four Weddings and a Funeral, also in Multiplicity, directed by Mr. Ramis. She was in a movie named Michael with John Travolta about an angel or something. Chris Elliott plays Larry, the camera guy for Bill Murray's weatherman. And crowd favorite, Stephen Tobolowsky, who we've seen previously in Sneakers, appears in Groundhog Day for roughly 4 to 5 minutes as Needle Nose Ned, Ned the Head, Ned Ryerson. Groundhog Day did about a $71 million return on a $14.6 million budget, so it was considered quite a success. It also won a few awards. It won a BAFTA award for best screenplay. BAFTA is basically the British Academy of the Academy Awards. Won best comedy film at the British Comedy Awards, and won Mr. Ramis and his co-writer won screenwriter of the year at the London Critics Circle Film Awards. So for some reason, this movie was extraordinarily popular or at least very well regarded in Britain. Groundhog Day has also been preserved in the National Film Registry, which is quite an honor. Its Rotten Tomatoes score has a 96% tomato meter, which is the critic score, 88% audience score, B plus cinema score. And we always refer back to our friend Siskel and Ebert. They gave it 2 thumbs up. Roger Ebert originally gave it 3 stars back in 1993 when it came out, but revisiting it 12 years later gave it 4 stars out of 4. So very well-regarded movie. Did pretty good at the box office. Bill Murray was a big hit. This is a strange time loop comedy philosophy type movie. The basic premise is a very dickish weatherman named Phil Connors, played by Bill Murray, is assigned to cover the stupid groundhog coming out of the ground. Not happy with the assignment, drives to Punxsutawney, stays there overnight, wakes up on Groundhog Day, covers it, and then a blizzard hits, and the group, Bill Murray is the weatherman, Andy McDowell as Rita is the producer, and Chris Elliott's the cameraman. They get stuck because of this blizzard. They're stuck in Punxsutawney. They have a crappy day. Everybody goes to bed, and then at 6 a.m., the alarm rings. I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher is playing for the second day in a row. And Phil Connors wakes up, and it's February 2nd again. And we go from there. So I'm going to toss it off to, let's go to Justin first. Justin, I know you've got a little bit to say about this movie, but give us your general thoughts, feelings, impressions. What do you think?
Groundhog Day was a phenomenal film. It's a film I've known about what seems like my whole life and really can't believe I haven't watched it, up to this point in my life. Bill Murray, he's tremendous throughout it as Phil Connors. And no movie comes to mind that's so focused and centralized on just one character. And I'll say it now, like, he's winning best performance from all three of us. I don't care what either of you have to say, because he just wins by default.
Yes.
This movie has everything. It has an extremely entertaining a plot, story to follow. It's very funny at different points in time. Even throughout the film, I found myself thinking of, things I would do if I was stuck in this never-ending loop. And Bill Murray, Phil does it all between getting with girls and trying to impress Rita and killing himself and
over
all different kinds of ways. It was it's a beautiful film, and I'm looking forward to getting into it with you guys.
All right, Justin, very, very high praise for the Groundhog Day. I thought Groundhog Day was a solid film. Made me think about what I would do if I had to keep living the same day over and over again. And I will say, when it comes to doing the same day over and over again, it really depends on the day. With Phil Connors being in the situation that he's in, he can only do so much with what he has available in Punxsutawney. With that being said, though, solid film. The ending left me a tad confused, which I'm sure that we'll get into, and I'll be able to ask questions about that. Unlike some movies that we've seen in the past, it was kind of on the border of kept me interested, but at one point I was kind of like, okay, like, come on, like, let's like see something else already. There were a lot of funny moments, and you can see a character that evolves through so many different situations in the same exact setting day after day after day. And I kind of want to ask you guys, when it comes to this situation, how many times, just out of curiosity, how many times do you think he relived the same day over and over again? If you had to guess, what would you guess?
Was that a snore?
No, I'm thinking.
Are you thinking?
No, sorry, I just finished the film. Sorry. I'd say 40.
40 times.
40. 40. You think he lived through the day 40 times?
30. I don't
know. I think he did it over like a couple hundred, maybe.
Okay. Do you guys want
to? Oh, you have the real answer.
Oh, I
would love to hear the real answer.
This has been analyzed pretty intensively. Originally, Harold Ramis, back in the 90s, speculated that he lived through 10 years of days.
What?
Wow.
So that would be, what, 3,600 days?
Wow.
Just a little off.
He has subsequently revisited that, and people have analyzed the movie and looked at, okay, how many days must he have lived to become an expert ice sculptor, to become an expert pianist, to learn fluent French, to do all of those things, to learn all the different things he learned about everybody in the town, to do everything that he ever talked about doing. The speculation is he repeated the day roughly 12,000 times, about 30 to 40 years of the same day over.
That's unbelievable. That's absolutely unbelievable.
Yes, and that explains, like, think if you lived through 100 days, would you be at the point where you're trying to kill yourself? I mean, he gets to the point where he's just fed up with life and hates it and wants to die. And you know, that's, it's got to take a while for that to happen. So yes, the speculation is he lived over the same day, 10 to 12,000 times somewhere in there.
Wow.
Which is insane when you think about it in that.
No, context. Absolutely. That is absolutely insane.
Yeah. But that's one of those things I liken that. And the first thing I thought of when I started reading about this and doing some research for the podcast was, this feels to me like 1989's Batman. So people talked about, you know, there was a big hubbub when The Dark Knight came out over Heath Ledger's Joker and, you know, what a vicious, great, awesome Joker he was, which I agree. It was a very well-written Joker. But people don't realize just how sadistic and insane Jack Nicholson's Joker was. Jack Nicholson killed thousands of people in 1989's Batman. You just don't notice it because a lot of it happens off screen and is just talked about. So that's similar to here where, you know, we maybe see him go through, what, 50, 60, 70 days, but he's going through 12,000. It's one of those things where until you really stop and think about what actually happened and go back and parse together pieces of the movie, you don't realize, holy crap, he's been doing this for a long time. It's very similar to me how I think about Jack Nicholson's Joker, where, you know, he killed hundreds of people in the original Batman movie. People don't realize, you know, they remember the campiness and the silliness and not the vicious depravity and murderousness of Jack Nicholson's Joker. So what's the best scene? I'm interested to hear from you guys because I'm not 100% sure I have one. I think I do, but it's more a compilation than a scene. And that also kind of brings in what is a scene in this movie? Are there real scenes? Cause they keep repeating the same thing over and over again. It's different days. Is it a different scene for every day, or is several subsequent scenes put together? I don't know.
I'll start with best scene. I know I joked before we started recording the whole movie is the best scene. But one I'll talk about right now is the bar scene where Phil is trying to impress Rita, you know, ultimately, get with her that evening. And, they really show it, only three times. First time comes over, orders, you know, his own drink. And then she orders her drink. So, you know, the next night he knows to order her drink to, you know, for them to have that similarity, you know, have that connection. So the next night he orders what she orders, and she orders what she orders, and she's like, oh, wow, that's my favorite drink. Then they go to have a toast, and he says to the groundhog, and she kind of looks at him in disgust and talks about how she cheers to world peace. The third time around, Phil nails it with the toast to world peace. I thought that was a very funny scene, just given what he set out to do. And even given it took the course of three nights to perfect this 15-second interaction at a bar. And, you know, as you see throughout the movie, you know, it becomes a point in time where, you know, Bill Murray needs to line up every little thing for things to be perfect, you know, when it comes to Rita. And it's not to say other scenes were bad. You know, just one I picked out, you know, one I really liked and, you know, one that I thought was funny.
I think that scene does a great job of getting across what Bill Murray is doing, what Phil Connors is doing to, he's basically living each day for these few moments in time to learn these little things about her that he can use. And that scene is definitely the best at capturing the scheme he's trying to pull. Absolutely. Nick, what say you?
I've been really thinking. I've given it a lot of thought. And I can't say that there is one scene that stands out to me as the best scene. I have a funniest scene, but I wouldn't sit there and say that it's the best scene. And I don't know if that helps or hurts the movie, but I couldn't think of anything that would make a bad scene. So I'm kind of stuck, you know, after watching a total of 10 movies now, this is probably the first time to where I couldn't sit there and find one, you know, best scene in a movie that I enjoyed. So I don't got much for you guys, unfortunately. Say it's, you know, it might be a weak answer, but I can't really sit there and pick out one and say, yeah, that's the best.
It is hard. I agree that it's difficult, and I think that's a testament to how good Bill Murray is throughout this movie. He's just great, corner to corner, you know, bell to bell. He's awesome. Every scene has its own little nuance and its own little importance. My favorite, and I think I'm going to go with favorite here, maybe over best, because I don't know that it's the best. I don't know that there is a best. My favorite is actually a series of scenes that are not back to back. So Justin, what you were just talking about, that scene, we're looking at the same, you know, minute over three or four straight times. For me, the best part of this movie and the part that I, to this day, quote, and I've probably quoted once or twice a month, every month since I first saw this movie back in 1993, is Ned Ryerson. When Ned Ryerson introduces Stephen Tobolowsky from Sneakers, when he introduces himself as, you know, it's me, it's Ned, Ned the Head, Needle Nose Ned. I just find that hysterical. And then the interactions between Bill Murray and Ned Ryerson over the course of the movie are fantastic. You know, he goes from brushing him off to answering every question he asks, and Ned Ryerson can't believe that he knows all this stuff, to the hug and the insinuation that, you know, he wants to spend a quiet, intimate evening with Ned Ryerson, which freaks Ned Ryerson out. Those series of those moments are just my favorite part. They're the most quotable part of the movie. You know, I think about Ned Ryerson all the time. He's one of the most memorable characters in cinema for me.
Wow.
Certainly. So that's my, I just absolutely love Ned Ryerson. Me and Joey talk about Ned Ryerson all the time. Me and an attorney I work with, Scott, talk about Ned Ryerson.
Is there like a Ned Ryerson fan club that you're a president of?
If there, Well, this is why I saw this movie before I saw Sneakers, and that's one of the reasons I love Stephen Tobolowsky's character in Sneakers so much. It just reminds me he's Ned Ryerson to me, and I just love Ned Ryerson. It's just one of those things that I just love it. Love it.
Wow. Okay.
So, Nick, since you didn't have a favorite scene or a best scene, you said you have a funniest.
So throughout this long journey, which is literally just one day, as Michael's mentioned, possibly up to 40 years of just reliving the same day, we finally get to the final day that Phil Connors is living in Punxsutawney. And that night, he is at a party, and I believe it was the main gentleman that was in charge of announcing whether or not the groundhog had seen his shadow. He gets up on stage and says, you know, if there are any, you know, bachelors out there, you know, come forward and we want to have you bid on them and all proceeds will go to charity. Well, Phil goes up there and, you know, they're going back and forth and Rita bids everything that she has, which is, you know, upwards of $300. So they're looking for another contestant or, you know, I guess another worthy bachelor to go up there. And so Larry decides to nominate himself and he goes up there and the guy, who's in charge of the event. So he's looking at Larry. He's like, yeah, so what about this guy? And everyone just kind of like looks around and no one says anything. And he's like, $1.50? And he just keeps going lower and lower and lower. And Larry just kind of standing up there really awkwardly waiting for somebody to say something. And then you come across this old, very old woman, and she goes, $0.25. And he's like, sold for $0.25. And she's like, yes, I got him. And Larry looks out into the crowd and sees the woman. And I know I'm going to have to bleep this out, but he mouths to himself, oh, and it's just really funny that out of all those people there and reliving that day over and over again, for Phil at least, there were all these different outcomes, but no matter what happened, Larry wasn't able to ever get on top in any of them. And it just proved at the very end of the film when Larry went up on stage and was only worthy of $0.25.
Well, while we're on the topic, in the Falling Down episode, there was an S word that you didn't
know. No. Yeah, really?
Yes. By the way, you did a great, phenomenal job on the audio on that. I was, after all the trouble I know we had, it sounded
That's
phenomenal.
Great.
Did not sound, sounded like it recorded
all
perfectly.
Right. What do you know where that S so word is so I can go get rid of it?
I do not remember, but I'm pretty sure it was me that said it.
No.
But it's fine. It's all right.
All
That's
right.
What we do.
Nick, you are a thief.
Sure am.
At 6 a.m.
Really?
Wow. At 6 a.m., I won't remember. A moment I want to talk about. The scene itself isn't funny, but this 5-10 second interaction was hysterical to me. Bill, you know, Phil comes down the first time he's experiencing, you know, deja vu. He comes down into the lobby or, you know, where everyone eats within the hotel. You know, it's not really a kitchen, I would say. But he comes down and Mrs. Langster, you know, who runs the hotel, who works there, you know, approaches, you know, Bill every morning and, you know, just ask him how he slept, you know, ask him how he is, tries to have a little chit chat with the weather. And then Bill, you know, eventually asks her if she's ever had deja vu. And she looks at Bill and says, I don't think so, but I can check with the kitchen. And I had to pause it because I was just laughing so much. And I'm like, I got to get this down for the podcast. And I even went back, you know, 10 seconds and watched it again. And it was just hysterical for me. You know, and there are a lot of other funny parts in the film. I'll let Michael go before I hit on what's been missed. But I went with that little deja vu interaction.
There were a lot. And, you know, I feel like there is a lot we have to talk about that's not really covered by our general format. And maybe we get to as part of the recap. But before we get there, my funniest scene, and it's not really even a funny scene. I think it's more funny to the viewer and not necessarily anyone in the movie. But there's one scene where they're in the inn, you know, the little hotel thing he's staying at, and they're in the common room, and Bill Murray's sitting in an armchair, and there's a bunch of old people sitting around, and they're watching TV. And they're watching Jeopardy. And every time Alex Trebek gives an answer, Phil Connors knows the question, and he's saying it before people even buzz in, and all the old people are looking at him like he's God, because he knows all the answers to Jeopardy. And I thought, you know what? If I lived the same day over and over again, that's the first thing I would do is learn all the questions to that day's episode of Jeopardy. And then I would just go around winning everybody's money. Not that it would matter.
Say, Nick, you must be giving this movie a 10 because we had some, a little bit of Jeopardy in it.
Oh, no. No, Nick's giving this a 4 because it's not realistic. It couldn't possibly happen. And there are no
superheroes. So.
But Bill Murray is God.
Either superheroes.
Bill Murray is God.
That's true. Maybe he is. So I think we should, before we move on, we should cover some of these scenes. And because I think what gets lost in this movie is its poignancy. It's yes, it's a comedy, but it's also very, very, very philosophical. You know, this movie is about, I mean, it's an unending loop. He's stuck where he is. And, you know, I think the greatest thing about Bill Murray in this movie is how unlikable Phil Connors is at the beginning. Without him doing anything, like, he's not an overt jerk. He's just a nasty person, you know, in little biting, nasty ways. He's just getting across that his character is just a piece of crap. And, you know, Rita and Larry are, you know, it's like they're used to working with, quote, talent, and talent are jerks, and they're just like, whatever. And they would just want to get done with him as soon as possible and move on with their lives. And I think it's an amazing performance from Bill Murray to get that across so quickly and emphatically without having to go over the top. Like, he's just an arrogant prick. And you get that sense right from the first second he comes on screen.
No, you're definitely right, Michael. And the thing that was really, you know, and obviously we have touched upon this time that he has been doing this day over and over again, but to see the transformation, and I don't know if it's him realizing how much of a bad guy he is, you know, how much of a jerk and how inconsiderate and how, you know, much he believes that he's just better than other people. And, you know, it really goes to show that he doesn't care. And I think the most telling part of that is in that final day towards the very end of the film, when he comes to the groundhog site and he is bringing the two people, Rita and Larry, coffee, he goes, you know, Larry, I never really get to ask anything. Like, you have kids, you know, he starts like asking them questions, and it's like, wow, like, this guy really never cared about anyone other than himself. And to see how he has gone so far in all of those do-overs to now finally actually give a crap. And it wasn't just about Larry, but it was the old man who passed away and trying to give him, you know, a good day and all the other things that he did.
It's really great, and there's so many different scenes and so many different ways that it shows not only the insanity that he goes through from living the same day over and over again, the change of heart that he has by living the same day over and over again. Really, really great stuff.
That reminds me a lot of that scene you mentioned. It reminds me a lot of an episode of Celebrity Jeopardy. The spoof Celebrity Jeopardy from Saturday Night Live. Are you guys familiar with this?
I know about it. I've never seen it though.
Okay. 1 week, maybe instead of watching a movie, I'll just have you guys go back and watch the dozen or so Celebrity Jeopardy skits. Daryl Hammond plays Sean Connery in the early ones. It's Norm MacDonald playing Burt Reynolds. And then it transitions to Daryl Hammond playing Sean Connery after Norm MacDonald left the show. Alex Trebek is played by the great and wonderful Will Ferrell. And there's one episode, one skit way late in the sequence. And Sean Connery just treats Alex Trebek like crap. Every episode, he's making fun of him, laughing at him, insinuating that he loves men, he's gay, he's all kinds of horrible things that, he can say. He insinuates that he has sex with horses and lots of fun, different insults from Sean Connery towards Alex Trebek. And then on one episode way at the end, he says, Alex, that sure is a nice jacket. And Alex Trebek just looks like completely taken aback that Sean Connery is complimenting him. He's like, thank you, Sean. And that is what I'm reminded of by this scene. And anyone out there who's seen the Celebrity Jeopardy skits will laugh along with it. But that's what the scene reminds me of. It's something so totally unexpected and out of left field. And Larry's just like, oh my God, he's like a regular person and sees him in a whole new light.
Guess I'm gonna have to watch some Celebrity Jeopardy now.
It's some funny stuff. That along with the Centaur skit with Christopher Walken.
When this
best skit in SNL history.
When this movie started, given, the dick Bill Murray was, I questioned if I was even gonna like this movie because I'm like, I don't know if I could, watch or, sympathize for this character who's, being such an a-hole. But, all he experiences and all he witnesses and, all the realizations he comes to, transforms him into this kind and caring and loving individual. And to me, that was, there could have been no better outcome for him, just given the type of character he was and, given... what he ultimately wanted and got, definitely, a character that I'll never forget, for the rest of my life, just given his transformation and, all he experienced and went through.
Now I on the transformation, as speaking to the amount of time that he had continued to live this day, when do you think that he realized that maybe making this difference would matter? And I'm not saying when we saw it in the film, but just, was it 10 years in? Was it 20 years in? Was it like, towards the 30, 40 year mark? Was it like towards the very, very end? Maybe like it was like a couple months in that last year that he had relived the day to where he was like, maybe like I'll just, be nicer to people.
I'm not really sure. I'm not sure that he ever did realize that it was going to make any difference. I think it's an interesting, and this is where the philosophy comes from. It's interesting that, over the course of all of this time, he starts off doing selfish mm-hmm. things. He wants to get the hottest girl in town to mm-hmm. sleep with him. He steals the money from the armored mm-hmm. car. He's just a crappy person doing spiteful things. And I think what he realizes by living the same day over and over and being around these people, you know, kind of my view of it is as time passes, he's realizing that he's not getting any fulfillment out of that, which is ultimately what leads him to be, you know, all he wants to do is end it, because he gets to the point where he just completely hates his life. And then when he can't, you know, he tries over and over and over and over again to kill himself with no success. And he just keeps waking up the same day again and again. And I think he just, I guess it just turns out he starts something different and he tries something nice. And doing that nice thing, maybe that fulfills him a little bit more. And then the next day when he wakes up, he feels a little bit better about himself. And then he keeps doing nice things to the point where, you know, now he's got a routine where every morning he wakes up and walks through the whole town and saves all these people from bad things happening to them. You know, from the kid falling out of a tree that he catches to, you know, the most... I guess the best thing he tries to do is there's an old man who mm-hmm. dies and he over and over is trying to save this old man. He brings him to the restaurant. He feeds him, you know, he brings him to the hospital. He brings him to the doctor. He's trying anything he can, but every day the guy, no matter what he does, the old man dies. And that, I mean, that to me is the most striking segment of the movie, where it's like, maybe that's where he finally learns this lesson that, you know, life is what it is and things that are meant to happen are going to happen, but you can make other people's lives better in the interim. And that kind of continues on his route of trying to do good things. And, you know, it seems like there's a switch. Early on, he's trying to get Rita to like him because he wants to sleep with her. Later on, he's just trying to get Rita to like him because he likes her. You know, you see that he starts to see her differently. And one of my favorite parts of the movie is the snowball scene where they're building the snowman and then these kids run over, you know, come over and start throwing snowballs at him. That's the first scene in the movie where Phil Connor seems like he's actually enjoying himself. And that, you know, that's a pretty powerful scene to me. You know, there's a lot of powerful stuff in this movie that gets lost in the fact that it, you know, it's a Bill Murray comedy. And that dichotomy actually led to Bill Murray and Harold Ramis. You know, they didn't talk to each other for 20 years after this movie. They did 5 movies together over the span of, you know, 10, 15 years. And then apparently they both had different ideas of which direction the movie should go, the comedy or the poignancy. And there's, you know, there's differing reports of who wanted what, but the, you know, the fact is they didn't talk again until Harold Ramis was on his deathbed and Bill Murray's brother convinced him to go visit him and talk to him. And finally, I don't know if bury the hatchet is the right word, but you know, finally talk again. So that's big. Yeah. There's a lot behind this movie and it's not just, you know, it's a thinking man's comedy or maybe a laughing philosopher's philosophy movie. I don't know.
Deep.
Justin, you said you wanted to get into a few things. What do you got?
Other scenes I wanted to hit on, some funny scenes. Another thief move within this podcast, the Jeopardy scene is hysterical.
yes.
The kidnapping of a Punxsutawney Phil and the getaway, you know, in that red truck. And even Phil gets Phil out of his cage. And obviously Phil Connors is driving, but he puts Punxsutawney Phil on the wheel. And, you know, there's a couple shots where you clearly see, you know, Phil Connors holding Punxsutawney Phil and like talking to him. And I thought that was funny. you have the you know, the first piano lesson scene where you know, Bill goes to this old lady's house, asks for lessons. He's told that she's currently with a student, for her to come back tomorrow, but as we know, there is no tomorrow. Offers her $1,000. He immediately begins his lesson while the young girl is kicked out of the old lady's house. You also have the moment, you know, Chris Elliott, you know, Larry the cameraman is talking to Nancy, you know, the girl that Bill got with, you know, earlier in the film, at the bar. And, you know, they head to the party, you know, they head to the dance floor. Larry goes to tip the bartender, but as he gets up, he takes those $2 right back. Let's see. And then I know why Michael loves this movie, because, you know, while Bill and Rita are on the dance floor, you know, a lot of different people, you know, approach, you know, Phil and thank him for all he's done, you know, in that given day, you know, all these different acts, and was able to convince a eventual bride to stay with her fiance. They got married that day, and yes. Bill gifts them two tickets to WrestleMania, which they absolutely adore, the newlyweds. You know, they're all excited that they're going to be going to that. So, you know, right when I saw that scene, I'm like, this is why Michael loves that film. He wishes that was him receiving those tickets. And
I can never go to WrestleMania. It's during tax season. I can never go. It's always the end of March or beginning of April.
Yeah, that was, you know, outside of the scenes we discussed earlier, as far as funny went, you know, those are all the scenes I had.
All right, so I have a question, and maybe you guys will have an answer for me. We get to all of these different situations, Phil going to jail, driving himself off the cliff, jumping off of the bell tower, sleeping with all these people. He talks about even more of the things that he has done when he's at the diner in the morning with Rita. But what makes me wonder is, why was it that day, the last day that we ended up seeing? What made that day change everything and go from February 2nd until February 3rd? Because all the other outcomes that he did, clearly there was the wrong thing or not the right thing, whatever the case may have been. But what was it about that time to where now the next day can actually happen instead of it becoming a do-over?
Justin, what do you think?
It was all about, to me, obtaining Rita the right way. Not the whole, you know, sleeping or sex way, just the, you know, the nice, genuine, caring, loving way. And, you know, that last day, you know, and all the shots and scenes that, you know, that day consisted of were just beautiful. And all the time and effort that went into, you know, Phil, you know, playing the piano, and, you know, the ice sculpting of her face, and obviously the tickets and all the good things he did for people throughout the day. I think whoever, I guess, who knows, is outside power or, you know, whatever the case is, why the days keep, you know, going, you know, same day keeps repeating itself. I guess it was broken because he transformed from this, you know, mean, selfish person into this loving, caring one. So that's where I'm at. I'm interested to see what you guys have to say.
I think the final scene has a part in it that I'm sure people notice, but then forget about immediately. And it's the fact that, not the final scene, but when he wakes up and it's finally February 3rd. He's wearing his pajamas, which means they didn't sleep together. And I think for me, it's where he wanted to win her affection, not so he could sleep with her, but so she would like him. That to me is, you know, what finally did it. It was no longer selfish in the sense of he was trying to get something for himself. You know, he finally cared about someone else enough to care what they thought, felt, cared about, et cetera. That's what I took away from it. And apparently there was a lot of argument over that last scene, over whether he was going to be wearing pajamas or not, because of the different ways you could interpret it. And apparently it took a while to figure that out.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out what it was that maybe he needed to accomplish. You know, was it redemption? Was it doing something to make himself whole? Was it doing something to, you know, show that he's not that bad of a guy? You know, what exactly he needed to, you know, figure out to get to that next day. Because, you know, I think some people could argue, well, you know, look what he did for the old man and look what he did for all these other people. And, you know, that may be true, but, you know, I think it was not only, you know, that, but really a combination of finding out what he wanted and how he could accomplish that in a way that wasn't slimy or in a way that wasn't manipulative. And I think you guys, you know, really hit the nail on the head, which is making, you know, Rita like him for, you know, who he is and not trying to, you know, oh, I'm going to learn French and oh, I'm going to say all the right things and oh, I got to make sure no white chocolate, no fudge, because that was all stuff just to you know, immediately get something out of her, to where this was, I actually want to take the time and do the right thing and try this the more proper way, the more respectful way, the more mature way, and not just, hey, I have a, you know, a repeat of everything, so I'm just going to learn everything about you and try to get a quick score.
I agree wholeheartedly. All right, who wants to go first? Final thoughts, rating. What are we going to rate this movie? Does it have a shot to catch Sneakers? Sounds like it might.
I think it does, and I'll get us going in that direction. Groundhog Day, for me, a 10.
Whoa.
This movie was beyond entertaining. I loved every second of it, loved every scene. Quite hysterical at times. Bill Murray's performance is tremendous as Phil Connors. Just, you know, absolutely dominated this movie. You know, his transformation was just great to see. And, I loved everything about it. You know, all the different things he did and he tried are all definitely things that I would have done if I knew that, you know, what I did had no consequence and I'd wake up the next day. So it's a 10.
You know what's sad? I think if I woke up to the same day every day, I would probably just do the same thing every day. I don't know that I'd vary it at all. I'd just be like, why change it? I like the way I live my life. Why would I do anything?
That's such a Michael answer.
I know. I'd go to work. I'd work all day. I'd come home. I'd eat dinner. I'd play a game with my son and go to bed.
It's a great maybe, Michael
maybe
answer.
Maybe tape a podcast with my cousins in the interim.
It's great.
Question, Justin, did you discuss this movie or watch this movie with your girlfriend at all?
No, this movie, I finished watching it and minutes later we all got into the same Zencaster group.
You too?
We got going and, you know, I kind of thought to myself,
so you've had no time to reflect.
Well, yes, I had no time to reflect, but I will say, having, you know, finished the movie, no movie has struck me in that phenomenal 10 way. And even though I've given, you know, Silence of the Lambs a 10 and, you know, Sneakers a high rating, I never had such a positive reaction to a film, you know, having finished it.
Is this up there in your favorite movies, then?
Yeah, I would say so.
Do you think?
Favorite,
do you need more time?
Yeah, give me like 3,000 days or whatever. But I would put this in my top 15. I would say maybe that's a list I need to make and to really figure out. But definitely up there for me.
And hopefully we can replace 12 to 14 of those with some 90s movies.
What do you guys got?
All right. So what do you think? Should we let Nick spoil it at the end and I'll go before him?
Yeah, let Nick go last.
Let Nick spoil it right now.
Let Nick go last.
All right. And we still got a shot. We got a shot. For me, this movie is a 9. A very, very solid 9. It's close to a 9.5. And there's really only one reason why. What About Bob is the reason why. Because What About Bob, also starring Bill Murray, and What About Bob came out in, it was around the same time, maybe a year or two before. For me, What About Bob blows Groundhog Day out of the water, as great as Groundhog Day is. So for that reason, and really only for that reason, I gotta kick it down a little bit. You know, for this type of movie, the structure, it's a, you know what? I'll say it is a 9.5. I'll give it a 9.
He bumped it up. He gave it an extra point.
I did. I'm gonna bump because when I think about it, that's not a good reason to bump it down just because something else is better. And when we watch What About Bob, which we will, that's a 10 for me. That's one of my favorite movies. But I'm going to go 9.5. It's definitely, it's got everything. This movie's got everything except a large cast. It's got fun. It's got importance. It's got heart. It's got mind. It's got soul. It's got it all. All right, Nick, let's see. Let's see what you say and where this comes in. It's got a chance. It's got a chance to be number one and a pretty good chance to be number
two. So I changed my rating while we were doing this.
Oh. From when you said it right before we started.
it's a solid film. It is a solid film. That's my first impression when I finished it. I think just like Sneakers, it was a film that I could not come away with any negatives. Looking back at some of the films that we've done, some of the ones that I liked, some of the ones that I expected to be really, really good. First one that comes to mind is White Men Can't Jump. Hated the Jeopardy scene in that. Thought that was a waste. going in.
Oh, yeah. We need to get your thought. What are your thoughts on the Jeopardy scene?
I thought that was great.
Comparatively speaking,
I thought that...
Do you just hate Jeopardy?
No. Or? It's not that I hate Jeopardy. It was because this made sense in reference to what, you know, Bill Murray's character, Phil Connors, is going through. He knows every single question. He knows every single, you know, he already knows where the Daily Double is. You know, it's not going to be a surprise, you know, when Trebek's like, oh, Daily Double, like he already knows because he's probably seen the episode, God only knows, close to 100 times by now. And the way that, you know,
potentially as many as 12.
Yeah. If he had watched it every single day that he, you know, was there, and the reaction from the three old people that are in that living room setting where they're all clapping because he did such a great job, like, oh, wow, like, you know, this guy was great. And really it's just like, I've seen this episode so many times, somebody kill me. Like, that's really what's going through his head at that point. And that fits so much better into the story of Groundhog Day versus, hey, we're going to play basketball and a lot of things are going to happen. And, oh, yeah, by the way, so I work like security at a parking lot and somehow that gets you on Jeopardy. Like, no, that don't fly for me.
Well, it's good to know you just don't indiscriminately.
Oh, no, no. I think Jeopardy's a great show. I watch Jeopardy occasionally and try to guess, and usually I'm terribly wrong, but every once in a while when they bring up the sports category, I usually get all the answers correct. Or should I say all the questions correct? Because that's technically how you play Jeopardy. But solid film. As I mentioned in the beginning, made me think what I would do if I kept living the same day over and over again. And that all really depends on what day it is, you know, where you are, what you're doing, who you're with. As I mentioned, the ending left me a tad confused, but I think, you know, talking it over, that kind of really made me bump it up, was, you know, figuring out exactly what it was that Phil had to accomplish or do, or how things needed to play out for him to get over that hump, which was just living the same day over and over again. So I came away with an 8. I think it's a solid movie. Don't have anything negative to say about this film. I was looking forward to the film, and again, I did like it. I just don't think it was Sneakers level, you know, Hercules level. I know that I gave Digstown a 9. True Romance was an 8 for me as well. And I'm not saying that I used those films to try to compare for where I was exactly, but the what you feel and how the movie, you know, speaks to you, and what you come away with, like, oh my God, like, that was incredible. Like, the thing that made it not be higher than an 8 for me, and the best example I could give, is the scene in Sneakers where we go through the phone tapping, and then we go through Whistler re-listening to the sounds to try to figure out where Robert Redford's character had gone over the bridge and figure out where exactly he was. Like, that blew me away. And that makes a huge difference when you have that kind of impact. And we all had, you know, a lot of things to pick from that film. And even though I didn't have a best scene, you know, it's not to say that the movie was bad, but not to have one that really sticks out to me, you know, just gotta knock it down just a little bit. But I would suggest this film to somebody if they hadn't seen it before. I would suggest this film to somebody.
Definitely. Comedy fans, philosophy fans, Bill Murray fans, Stephen Tobolowsky fans.
Bill Murray's only flaw is that he's a Cubs fan.
I know.
That's it.
Well, he's also been in some pretty bad movies, but we're not going to watch any of those. Yeah. We're going to watch only the great ones. The
Caddyshack? Too bad it's not 90s, though.
It's not 90s. And I've never seen it before. You know?
It's a good one.
So that gives it a grand total of 27.5 out of 30, which is good for the second highest rated movie we've ever watched, behind Sneakers. Sneakers had 28.5, 3 9.5s.
So I believe this would be the second seal of approval that we are handing out to a film, because if I remember correctly, Michael, you said that anything over a 9 average gets it the seal of approval?
I don't remember ever saying that, but
I remember you, because you gave Sneakers that. That was the first time that we...
I have brain damage.
I know. I will go back and double check on that. But an overall score on average of 9.2 is great. It's only the second time that we have ever gotten that high. That actually, you know, kind of blows it away, because most of these films that we've rated are averaging around the 7-6 range. Yeah.
Films were murdered by somebody. We won't say names.
Nicholas doesn't like good movies, so, you know, unfortunately. Like, Silence of the Lambs has an average of 20, or an average of 10, until you get to Nicholas, and then it drops from 10 to 7. Unilaterally destroyed the movie.
I had to speak the truth. Truth hurts sometimes.
Yeah. Only when it's true.
falling down got a 6.7, and Michael gave it a 10.
Well... Yeah, because it's the best movie we've watched.
I've yet to hand out a 10.
With all that said, speaking of my brain damage, the next movie that we are going to watch next week was released on the day that I suffered significant brain damage, August 25th, 1995. That morning, me and some friends of mine went riding bikes down a hill through sticker bushes for fun, some trail I had never been on. I don't know where that trail is because I cannot remember that morning. On the way back, we were driving riding our bikes back to where I lived in Elberon, part of Long Branch, New Jersey. We were in West Long Branch at the time, driving around behind Monmouth University. I believe it was university at the time. It might have still been college.
I think it was still college. I think it was college.
Yeah. When did it change to university?
I know that I was in middle school, I believe, so I'm going to...
Oh, okay. Then, yeah, you were barely alive at this point. So Monmouth College, we were riding our bikes, me, three friends, myself and my friend Nick were riding in front. Joey and Evan were riding behind us. We were coming up to a corner with a stop sign, and, you know, being 14-year-old kids, stop signs were completely meaningless. The corner had very high, you know, 8-9 foot tall shrubbery, so we couldn't see down the road, and my friends behind us, you know, could see around the shrubbery and saw a Nissan Pathfinder riding down the street. I rode my bicycle, probably going somewhere around 18 miles an hour, directly into the driver's side door of the moving Nissan Pathfinder, broke my collarbone, had severe bleeding on the brain, was in the hospital for roughly 2 months. But I'm proud to say I was excited to see a movie coming out that day. It was a Friday. So this was a Friday morning. I was planning to go to the movies that night to see this movie. And I am proud to say that while I was in the movie, or while I was in the hospital, at Children's Specialized Hospital in Toms River, New Jersey, I convinced my caretakers to take a trip with me in a wheelchair to the mall. I don't know what mall it was, but some mall in or around Toms River, to watch this movie. So I did get to see this movie in the movie theater. And I believe this is the first movie we're watching that I actually saw in the theater during its original run. And that movie is Desperado, written, produced, and directed by the great Robert Rodriguez of Sin City and Spy Kids fame, starring Antonio Banderas in his first major English language American movie, the film debut in America of Miss Salma Hayek. Steve Buscemi appears, Joaquim de Almeida, Cheech Marin, Danny Trejo, and one guy you may have heard of, Quentin Tarantino, makes what might have been his acting debut. Desperado is technically a sequel, though it is also a standalone movie. It's kind of the second part of a trilogy. My fourth favorite movie of all time, which, if you've been listening, you know means this movie is centered on vengeance. And movies centered on vengeance tend to be some of my favorite movies. So I'm excited to watch this movie. I haven't seen it in a few years. I'm excited for you guys to watch this movie. I'm excited for Nicholas to come back in a week and say, well, that movie isn't realistic. It only gets a 4. And I'm excited to see what Justin thinks, because he's somewhat reasonable sometimes. Also has one of the best soundtracks ever, in my opinion. A lot of Mexican-influenced music. There is a Mexican or Mexican-American band playing it. I can't remember the name of the band offhand. We'll have that for you next week. But I'm very excited to watch this movie, and I hope you guys have some time to watch this before we record.
No promises.
Next week. Give it some time to sink in. Maybe watch it tomorrow, a week ahead of time, instead of watching it on Tuesday. Watch it on Wednesday. You got plenty of time to think about it. So, any big plans for you guys for the next week, other than watching The Great Desperado and spending your life frittering it away on stupid
football. Well, I will say this, Michael, and it's not any fault of your own because of said brain damage, but it was in March of 1995 that Monmouth College became Monmouth University after receiving its charter from the New Jersey Commission on Higher Education.
So there you go. It was Monmouth University. Fancy that. I remember playing ping pong at Monmouth University when I was very young. Well, I guess it was Monmouth College. Yeah,
it was Monmouth Junior College from 1933 to 1956, and then from 56 to 95, it was Monmouth College.
And then you showed up.
I went.
And now it's Monmouth.
Yes. University. Yes, indeed.
I will be football frittering.
Yeah.
Week, I'll try to sprinkle a movie in.
Sure.
But I've really enjoyed tonight.
Well, you got Thursday night football.
Yeah, we got Thursday night. So. We got a little Bucks Panthers. That'll be terrible.
That means you got tomorrow.
I got tomorrow, Friday or Saturday. That's it.
But you're going to watch it. I don't understand.
What, the football?
I
love it.
Yeah. Why would you watch a terrible game?
Because football.
On a Thursday night. I just don't understand.
I know. I'm crazy.
Man. You know what you should do? Get an old Cowboys Super Bowl DVD and just watch that. Whenever there's a football game on,
that might upset me more because then I'll just realize we'll never get to that point again. We'll just never get to the pinnacle of the sport, and
you'll get to relive it. You can watch the great Emmitt Smith perform.
Yes, Smith for 6, Smith for 5, Smith for 3, Smith for 9. It's great.
Smith touchdown. Yeah.
And the best part is they would tell the opposing defensive lineman that they're running the ball right there, and it did not matter because they could not stop it.
Yep. They were the greatest. Greatest team of all time.
Heard it here first.
It's my opinion. No, you heard it a lot of places a long time
This
ago.
Is true.
It's 25 years old. Best team of all time. We're coming up on the 25th anniversary of their last Super Bowl win.
My God.
And when that would have occurred, that would have been in 1995. January 95 would have been their last Super Bowl win.
Damn, too long.
So we're going to be at 25 years. Who knows? Maybe we'll break it this year.
I'll tell you this. Some interesting facts that I said to Justin. So last year, Giants running back Saquon Barkley, who was a rookie, did not fumble in every touch that he had, yet in the first attempt in the Giants-Cowboys game that was week one, he fumbled on the first snap that he touched the ball. Going to the Monday Night Football game between the Texans and the Saints, wide receiver for the Texans, DeAndre Hopkins, did not drop a single pass thrown his way, and that even goes into passes that were not considered catches, ones that were either flagged or ones that he was out of bounds, and he caught every ball thrown his way. And on the first ball, he dropped it. So who knows? Maybe, just maybe, the unthinkable might happen, and Jerry Jones might be able to get another Super Bowl win.
We'll see.
And that concludes our sport interlude.
Yeah. All right, Justin, wrap it up.
Groundhog Day. Go see this film. Absolutely phenomenal. I'm ashamed of myself that I had not seen it prior to 4 hours ago. 10 for me. High scores all around. Go see it. Bill Murray's phenomenal. Tremendous plot. One of my favorites.
All right, to wrap this up, Justin, for one, made me watch tennis while there was Sunday Night Football on, Michael, so you will be happy about that. This has been episode 10 of 90s DVD Rewind. Once again, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter is at 90 Rewind. That's at 90 Rewind. And Facebook as well is at 90 Rewind. Or if you are in Facebook, you can type in at 90s DVD Rewind. Be sure to listen to us either on the Anchor app or at anchor.fm/90Rewind. That's anchor.fm/90Rewind. Apple Podcast, Breaker, Google Podcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Spotify, and Stitcher are all other platforms that you will be able to listen to 90s DVD Rewind. For Justin, Mike, this has been Nick. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day and get ready for next week's episode, Desperado.
That was fun.